A dramatic standoff and hostage situation at a local credit union. Name-calling and accusations between the mayor and the city's pension fund. And one big piece of Jacksonville's crumbling infrastructure could see some repairs. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or our WJCT app. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss our conversation with comedian and actor Arsenio Hall in town this weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning, but first it's Friday. Time to discuss the top stories of the week as we welcome Paula Horvath of the Florida Times Union.
Good morning. Hi, Melissa.
Fred Matthews, formerly of The Examiner.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And Claire Goforth, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Lots to discuss, from a tense hostage situation at Community First Credit Union over on Edgewood to big news that the mayor wants to have go forward when it comes to repairing one big piece of downtown's infrastructure. All of that ahead and more. But first, the deficit on the city of Jacksonville's pension fund is in the news again. Yes, did you hear about this? Apparently, the number was calculated using standards that seem to violate Florida law, and that could put the city and the taxpayers on the hook for, wait for it, up to $45 million more every year in pension costs. Yeah, we thought this thing was fixed. It actually isn't all the way fixed. Now, Mayor Lenny Curry says the city's actuary has been using an illegal method to calculate the pension debt. But he says it won't blow up the deal that voters approved in August to increase sales taxes in Jacksonville to pay down this liability. Meanwhile, pension actuary Jarman Welch is pointing the finger at the mayor. He actually called Curry an idiot. And he says that the mayor's policies related to the pension are giving the board less money to work with. Welch accused the mayor of, in his words, stoking controversy for problems he, the mayor, created. So we're going to start the roundtable with this discussion. And we want your calls at 549-2937. Here's our question to callers. What do you think of the pension actuary calling Curry an idiot mayor? Meanwhile, Curry is accusing the other side of using illegal methods to calculate the city's pension problems and debt. Give us a call at 549-2937 or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So, called him an idiot mayor. Claire Goforth.
Well, that took a lot of guts on his part. Certainly a lot of us got a chuckle out of that. I don't know if that was the most productive way to approach the negotiations, but he does have a point. This is political gamesmanship. I think that Curry may have some points there, but it does sound like, based on the report I was reading in the Times Union this morning, that if the city treasurer was had a conversation back in January with Welch about this increased payment, it's hard to believe that the mayor either shouldn't have known or did not know.
Well, that's what we'll learn as we continue to cover this. At the same time, Fred Matthews, Paula Horvath, Mayor Curry says the pension board either screwed up accidentally or on purpose. But either way, he's saying that the way they're handling this is not acceptable.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting way to take it. I thought the first, 100 days that the mayor was in office, he was going to look through the budget, look through everything, go through with a fine tooth comb, and come out with what things were, where we were financially. This pension issue was at the top of the list. Everything about the pension, how whatever monies were there, whatever monies were not there, all of that was gone through by the administration. The mayor himself is a CPA, if I'm not mistaken, and he's hired some of the best and brightest to look at this. This is a new executive director here at the pension fund. He certainly hasn't had as much time to look at the pension fund as the administration has. So, I mean, to come up with, $45 million that we didn't know about from one side. Somebody knew about this. And there's, you know, it's a nice way to go. The bottom line here is this is another opportunity to do what ultimately is the goal, and that is to get rid of this pension board and run the thing yourself from the city standpoint.
And you think that's the long game for City Hall, that that's what they'd like to see happen?
It has to be, because this is a big stumbling block.
Paula.
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me, wasn't there a horror movie where the tagline was, "It's back"? I mean, you know, we thought
we're
we
laughing,
had,
but it's actually pretty horrifying when we see the amount of money that's involved.
It's exactly right. You know, we have to do something. I agree with you. We have to do something about the pensions themselves, whether that is perhaps looking to the state to see if perhaps they can roll in our city employees into the state pension plan, or something that will help us here. Somebody should have known. Somebody did know. Obviously, the treasurer knew in January. And I find it unusual and kind of worrying that perhaps the mayor didn't know.
Well, this will be moved around. As the executive director says here, I mean, this is only a draft of. So this $45 million will not be real to us in about 2 or 3 months as they move the money numbers around and they actually get us a true report out of what's owed in the coming year from the pension board. The real issue is going to be those negotiations between the firemen, policemen, and the mayor. And that's where the real deal is going to be played out.
Let's talk about that. Curry has now after getting this half-cent sales tax thing through, now he's sitting down with the 9 unions on this voter-approved plan, Claire, using the half-cent sales tax revenue to pay down this incredible $1.7 billion liability. The city overall is in a $2.8 billion hole, which has generated negative attention from national publications in recent weeks.
Yes, certainly so. And the debt is very alarming. The city does need to address it. Now, the pension tax referendum required one of the funds to be closed, not all of them. Now, and I don't think that people are going to be okay with the idea that we're just going to move all of our police and firefighters over to a 401k style and take away that guaranteed pension that really is one of the only draws you have to come work here, because we pay less than most other cities around the state to our police and fire. And these are the people who are tasked with protecting us. You know, that is of paramount importance, the positions that they hold. I mean, look at the standoff yesterday. Those are the people that this will affect. So, you know,
we'll talk in a minute about that, the hostage situation at the credit union. Mm-hmm. And it's 549-2937 to join us. Fred.
Well, I mean, the problem we have here is that, if I'm not mistaken, did not the police and the fire union endorse Mayor Curry when he was running for office? And didn't they endorse this pension, this tax that we just agreed to tax ourselves with that starts 20, 30 years from now? And now they're sitting across the table from the guy who said all along that we've got to get rid of pensions and we've got to put them on a 401k. Mm-hmm. I mean, something's wrong with this picture here. They endorsed the very person and party who's campaigning to take away their benefit. Now, for the people at the table that are negotiating right now, they're not in any danger. All of them are going to be safe with whatever plan comes up. But the issue is going to be those new firemen, policemen, civil service workers between 1 and 5 years on the job. They're not going to have this if these guys negotiate that away. And as it stands right now, I don't see if they have very much leverage with the mayor not to negotiate it away, because the taxpayers are out of it. The voters are out of this. The voters will have nothing to say at this point. It's going to be between the city council and the mayor's office. I don't see how these guys are going to, I don't see how they have a political leg to really negotiate any very hard against this mayor.
Well, that may well be true, but the thing is that Mayor Curry has gone all in on this. This is the trophy of his candidacy. And if it doesn't go well, then he could very easily be a one-term mayor who doesn't have any real major accomplishment.
But let me ask you about that. Let's assume that the pension situation continues to be a problem. We'll see how it goes. Who would challenge Lenny Curry for re-election? Certainly no one on the Republican side.
That's true. On the Democratic side, that is an open field right now. I think there's a...
But would that person have a real shot? Given this, and I ask this quite bluntly, given the state of the local electorate and the state of the local Democratic Party apparatus.
Well, give us another year under Donald Trump's presidency, and we may see the tide of public opinion shift very much in favor of the Democrats.
But in terms of local politics, I don't see the police and fire union changing with that tide. They endorse this candidate, and they back this tax increase that he just had and the taxpayers backed it. That took the taxpayers out of it. These the police and fire union, noble as they might want to be, to try to save this pension fund, it is nothing. It is not a favorite of any of the majority of the city council, certainly not of the state legislature, for them to get this done. I mean, this is being taken. This is taking place all over the country.
But I think that even though a 401k, 403b kind of savings, retirement idea might be fiscally better, I don't think that police and fire folks are going to go along with that. I was up in Indiana over Thanksgiving, had an occasion to talk to a number of law enforcement people up there, and they said, if Jacksonville goes to a 401k type plan, they're not going to be able to hire the good law enforcement folks.
We're going to go to your calls as we discuss the top stories of the week in just a moment at 549-2937. Meanwhile, lots of tweets coming in about this top story. Here are just a few. Jay tweets the show, here we go with another businessman that says he'll fix our problems and can't even get the math right. Swipe at the mayor. Here are a few tweets. We've been saying for years they were not correctly funding the pension. No one listened. We were right. No comment on the name calling, but what's the objection to using the Florida retirement system? And here's one more tweet. The blueprint for pension destruction can be found on Alex's website. The Koch brothers fund the candidates to make it happen. He's referring to the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a lobbying organization that is heavily involved in these types of issues and sometimes has even written legislation and handed it already written and completed to lawmakers to pass into law. Claire.
You know, we keep asking why the American middle class is declining at such a fast rate, and yet we keep taking away the very protections of the working class, just like these pensions, just like the unions, and then the for-profit interest and the cities are able to pay people less and not guarantee them the same kind of benefits upon retirement, and we wonder why we have a growing problem with poverty. And I mean, these things are hand in hand. It's cause and effect. And we just can't keep changing these laws and taking away the benefits for the working people and then wondering why they can't make ends meet.
And that's really where we are. I mean, that's at the heart of this discussion taking place now between union and management. It just happens to be between government entities at this point. And right now it's a question, who's going to blink first? Is the police and fire leaders going to blink first and go along with this? They can't. They don't want to. They want to go into the state retirement plan, but the mayor is dead set against it. And quite frankly, he has a larger hand to play than they do.
We're going to go to a few calls. We're having a little trouble getting names in parts of town this morning. Please bear with our technical issues. Hi there. You're on the air. What's your name this morning?
My name is Mark. I'm in Mandarin.
Hi. Go ahead.
Regarding the comment that he's a CPA, the mayor, and should have known better, and the thing about here we go hiring a businessman and should have known what to do, CPAs audit financial statements. Pension plans are audited by actuaries, which is a whole different discipline. So the question is, who hired the actuary? And you have to rely on the actuaries. CPAs don't know how to do this stuff.
I thank you for pointing that out.
Now, didn't Mayor Curry use campaign funds to hire his own actuary to look at this independently?
That's what I thought when we went through this referendum. I mean, that was all done so that he could give the voters a good recommendation for how this was going to all work out.
And I don't remember any mentioning of the state waiver that apparently that the city has been receiving. That should have been, I mean, we've been receiving that for years. They should have seen that.
Well, again, the mayor is pointing a finger at the pension board saying that they either screwed up or they hid this knowledge from him. We have actually put in a request to the mayor's office to have him on the show. We'll hopefully have him on the show sometime this month. And the number to join the program is 549-2937. Also making headlines this week, Mayor Curry says, speaking of money, he wants a big chunk of cash from the state to rebuild part of the Heart Expressway, in particular those ramps that come down off the Heart Bridge to Everbank Field. Now, Curry told the Duval legislative delegation that the on and off ramps are hazardous and impede traffic flow on Bay Street, particularly when there's a game or an event going on. Knocking down the ramps and making a better connection to Bay Street would cost the state about $50 million. That would need to be approved by the legislature. As we have this discussion about fixing a big piece of our local downtown infrastructure, we need to point out that President-elect Trump has campaigned on a massive national infrastructure investment to shore up roads, bridges, and other parts of our infrastructure grid all across the country. Give us a call as we discuss this at 549-2937. And Claire Goforth, those ramps are old and probably are hazardous. They're not the only bridge around town, I have to say, that has caused concern. Let's talk for a minute, too, about the Matthews Bridge, which was built in 1953 and is over 60 years old.
Yes, the Matthews Bridge, and it was also hit by a boat last year. It's very, I mean, you drive over it, and even as just a average person behind the wheel of their car, you get the sense that this bridge is in danger. I think it's pretty interesting that the location of this $50 million spend also happens to be right where Shad Khan wants to develop the shipyards. It must be nice to be a billionaire and to be able to get infrastructure requests like that expedited by the mayor if you just ring the bell.
You think that has something to do with it?
It does seem that way. I mean, there are bridges all over town. The one down in Green Cove that, I mean, they very clearly have problems. So that's outside of Jacksonville. But there's infrastructural issues across the city and in neighborhoods where there aren't billionaires trying to make a huge development.
What about the argument that making that fix would bring more people into the urban core, would make it easier to get people in and out for games and events, and would bring more foot traffic, more excitement, and potentially more businesses into the urban core and the sports complex?
Well, maybe that's true. I go to every single Jaguars game for 7 years. I've only missed one, so I can say with a lot of authority that there's plenty of people going to the game, and I don't think I've ever heard any problems of any nature with the traffic flow after the game. In fact, it takes me 15 minutes to get home. So I don't really know. I think we were all kind of surprised by this. There's a big problem with the Heart ramps. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, I actually wasn't either. But I'd like all of your thoughts about not just that little piece of infrastructure, but all the other ones that have been crying out for attention and money that is hard to come by. We've had this problem on the North Bank with a piece of the walkway pretty much falling into the St. John's River. That is finally apparently going to be fixed. But there are a whole host of infrastructure issues that we could talk about.
You would think that this would be part of a major bit of infrastructure repair for the entire city that the mayor would put together or at least release, instead of giving us this bit here, which can be torn apart just like we're doing now. I mean, who's it benefit? What's the bigger picture here for these ramps? I mean, nobody's having problems getting in and out of downtown Jacksonville, especially during the games. We've already worked that out. I mean, it's not a problem. So what's the bigger picture here? What exactly do you want to do, Mr. Mayor, and who's it for? That's what these questions begin to lead into. We have a Matthews Bridge that's 63 years old. We've got the Heart Bridge that just got bumped into by a cruise ship. We've got the Main Street Bridge got bumped into by a cruise ship. We've got the Jacksonville Landing down there that's sitting on top of a floating on water by itself right down the street from. I mean, we've got a whole bunch of issues and street work all over the county. How does this fit into the general picture, Mr. Mayor? And when are you going to give us a full plan for this instead of giving us this piece here that sounds nice but makes no sense?
And look at Northwest Jacksonville. I mean, they have been complaining quite rightfully so about low spending on infrastructure in that part of the city for decades. And this, I would imagine may come as something of a smack to the face.
Right. And this isn't just a problem in Jacksonville. I mean, infrastructure all over the United States is problematic. We are spending, as a share of GDP, we spend significantly less today on our infrastructure than we did 50 years ago. Mm. We need to change that. I'm not sure this is where we need to be looking to change that. In Jacksonville, I'm not sure this is the most important bridge. I think we ought to look at all the bridges. Bridges are a problem throughout the United States. Which one is the worst?
And we want your calls about this, because at the national level, President-elect Donald Trump is coming out with an ambitious plan to raise $1 trillion to improve the nation's infrastructure. Supporters call it long overdue. By the way, Hillary Clinton had a plan for an infrastructure bank. Both candidates campaigned on this. Critics of Trump's plan call it a boondoggle that would line the pockets of wealthy investors while not really meeting the need for infrastructure repair. 549-2937. Let us know what you think about that.
Yeah, interestingly, Trump is calling for $1 trillion, and actually, the American Society of Civil Engineers estimates that to get our infrastructure up to standard, it would cost $3.6 trillion. That's how bad it is.
Well, I think that we really don't have very much choice when you travel, certainly the Northeastern Corridor there, what's going on there. I mean, every time I think about Japan and the bullet train and being able to get on a train and go wherever I want to go right then, not having delays, just even being able to travel right within your neighborhood, I'm still amazed that America refuses to look at that and make this Amtrak system work better. But it's just all over the place. The beauty of this is that it'll be great for contractors and as we see here in Jacksonville with the perpetual work on I-95 and I-10 and now out there at 295. But it has to happen. It's something that we really need to do. It's one of those issues, infrastructure repair, that you cannot argue
with.
Let's
go to Peter quickly in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I was under the impression that President Obama had proposed a major infrastructure project as a way of alleviating the unemployment issues, but that was ruled out by the Republicans because it would increase the debt. So the question is, how does the new program proposed by Mr. Trump avoid that?
Yeah, thanks for that. He did. Well, of course, there was the stimulus package, which he passed early in his first term that was controversial, but looked at infrastructure needs. Congress blocked Obama on this issue
in 2015,
pretty much for all 8 years of his presidency.
Yes, and now they have a Republican president, and they're singing a different tune. Now, bottom line, though, we do need to do this, but we're also talking about cutting taxes quite substantially. So, I'm not sure this is going to help the national debt. In fact, I feel quite certain it's going to escalate the national debt. But we do need to fix our infrastructure before we have a tragedy or numerous tragedies across the country.
And can Trump get his plan through Congress, given that this Congress is averse to raising taxes and doing a big outlay of government spending?
Well, he's not going to be raising taxes on the wealthy. He's going to be raising it on everybody $250,000 and below. That's the issue. And this Congress is going to go. They've already begun to send the signals. They're going to go with ideas like this because it does give jobs on the construction and contractor side to those major contracting companies that are out there. So they're going to make money. The money is going to flow back to the public sector off of this, whether it's and it's going to flow from public sector to private sector. So the money's there. It's going to be spent. It's just a question of who in the end is going to end up paying for this thing. And I don't think the president-elect has never made any secret about what his taxing plan is going to be. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. And I don't think the Congress is going to refuse it.
Let's go to Lowell on I-295. Speaking of our highways and byways. Hi, Lowell.
Good morning, Melissa. Great show, Jenna, as always.
Thanks.
Basically, I've been putting up out here in Mandarin with 2 years of production of these so-called Lexus lanes that are going to have pricing for the people that can afford it, and we've been putting up with the bad traffic, and eventually I think all it's going to do is increase growth, and I see nothing in this town, absolutely nothing, as far as rapid transit or improved transit. I still can't get from Mandarin downtown to a baseball game without driving my car. So anyway, you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for a great show.
Thank you. John in St. Augustine. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi. I'm really interested in the whole discussion from the previous administration and this administration about infrastructure development. And I think my one problem I've got is that we're talking about this as if it's some new issue. You know, I think one of y'all said that 50 years ago there was a huge increase, or there was significantly more spent on infrastructure, and my guess would be that was on capital development. This country does a really good job of building things, new stuff. They've got an abysmal job of maintaining things. So I don't know how that's going to happen, but as long as we have a discussion that talks about getting a whole bunch of new money for new infrastructure, for infrastructure development, we've lost sight of the way we ought to be looking at this, in my view.
Thank you for that, John. Thanks for that. Paula?
Yeah, I agree with John. I think the other thing is that this country does a great job as far as infrastructure with short-term fixes, but we have not been good at looking at those long-term kind of rehabilitation projects that we need.
One more call. Andrew in Mandarin. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Specifically talking about the Hart Bridge overpass, as unsightly as it is, having gone to some Jaguar games, it is it's very useful. It keeps you out of the sun. It's a great place to tailgate, and I know that people enjoy that.
That's a good point.
He's got a point there.
It does have some good functionality. But that being said, I know that cities like Portland have torn down highways and elevated highways around their downtown and really redeveloped their areas. What about removing the cars from that area and redeveloping that area, something like a High Line in New York City, which every time I visit, I'm just floored by what an amazing, asset in their downtown.
Oh, maybe that's an interesting idea. Yeah. Thanks for that. Thanks, Andrew. And of course, when the mayor came out with this idea, he said the reason for those ramps was it dates from that part of the North Bank's heyday as a shipping hub, which isn't really the case anymore. But they were built that way to accommodate ships. Apparently.
I love the idea of the High Line. I mean, if you're not familiar with the High Line, it's a old raised area that they've planted all in indigenous plants and gardens. And,
yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's beautiful. I think that would be a great thing there that, you know, the people, if they build apartments, could look out their back door and see the High Line, Jacksonville's High Line.
And those things would be nice if they were all a part of a plan, a master plan that I thought that we did, a 20-year plan we've often discussed this. We've had community discussions on this where everybody had a buy-in. We have the Downtown Development Authority, DIA as they call it now, that's supposed to be working on these type of plans. And that's where this should filter through, so it won't be such a surprise to many of us about what are you talking about and how does this fit into the general scheme. And that's the thing here. Putting this out like this is nice to talk about, but how are you going to pay for it? How does it fit into the overall plan for downtown Central Jacksonville to make that work? And what about the people who are already living down there near this? Their access to getting in and out of town on those bridges, how are they going to be affected? And if and when they ever finish Berkshire 2.
Yeah, really. Okay. So if you're just tuning in, as we talk about the top stories of the week, you probably followed this on television yesterday. A dramatic standoff at a branch of Community First Credit Union on Edgewood Avenue West luckily ended with no one getting hurt or killed. 23-year-old gunman Nicholas Humphrey entered the credit union around 9 a.m. yesterday with his dog, fired a gun, took more than a dozen hostages as he tried to rob the bank. He's now charged with armed robbery, kidnapping as well, after dozens of officers swarmed the scene and took him into custody, including the SWAT team. City Councilwoman Katrina Brown said her mother had just left this credit union when the hostage standoff began. Lots of drama. Luckily, it ended okay. Props to the first responders for handling this. They had to use a front-end loader as a battering ram to punch a hole in the credit union's wall to resolve this standoff.
Yeah, I mean, good job on our first responders. They saved lives yesterday from the sounds of it. But the gentleman who's accused of this crime, it sounds to me like a case of someone who is in desperate need of mental health services, potentially, who didn't ever get those. And this is what the result of that. I mean, we know that we don't spend enough money on mental health. We spend less than we did decades ago today. And I mean, these are the kind of things that happen when people, you know, for the reports that Paulo was mentioning earlier, was that he didn't even really demand money. So who breaks into a bank with a gun and their dog and fires a shot and then starts asking for his mother? I mean, this is a sad story.
Yeah, it is.
I agree. Yeah, when they talked to his father, actually, they said that the father said that he had been acting very differently the last two or three months, that, you know, he was even thinking about having him committed. And the mother said, I believe it was the day before that he went into the credit union, that he had told her that he was going to send her his big toe. So there's obviously something wrong with this young man. I mean, he is at 23 years old. He is right in the corridor, 16 to 25, where people, especially men, develop schizophrenia. You know, so he needs some help. And we as a community also need to look at mental health care.
And I appreciate both of you bringing that up, this news organization, and hopefully others will continue to cover that aspect of the story. Well, finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material for you. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida does a senior citizen weaponize his oxygen machine. 74, this is the ultimate Florida story, is 74-year-old Lawrence Starr of North Palm Beach is one dangerous septuagenarian. He was turning into the parking lot of a post office when a tow truck cut him off. Starr got out of his car, got into the tow truck, and pulled the key out of the ignition. The tow truck driver then got into Starr's car and pulled his key out of his ignition. So Starr took off his oxygen machine and started hitting the other guy on the head and face.
Whoa.
Yeah. Watch out for those senior citizens in Florida.
Boy, nobody had a cigarette lighter.
Finally, a happy ending here in Jacksonville is only in Florida is a massive manatee he rescued from a storm drain. An incredible tale this week in Ortega as they pulled the female 950-pound manatee out. Did you watch this happen on social media?
We love animal stories in this town. I can't figure that out.
And again, kudos to first responders.
This is exactly right. It was the JFRD and the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, a first of its kind rescue ever for them, and they took her to SeaWorld for treatment. So good for them.
Yay.
And thanks to our panel, Claire Goforth, Fred Matthews, and Paula Horvath. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Thank you.
All right, thank you,
Melissa.
In a moment, comedian Arsenio Hall joins the show. That's next.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at NorthFloridaTPO.com.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President-elect Donald Trump starts a victory tour with a stop in Cincinnati. Nancy Pelosi is re-elected House Minority Leader. And North Carolina prosecutors say the police officer who killed Keith Lamont Scott will not face charges.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, he's a versatile actor, comedian, and producer. And Arsenio Hall is a household name, first rocketing to success with his Emmy-winning late-night talk show. These days, Arsenio is doing everything from acting and TV and film projects to stand-up. Yeah, you can check him out on stage tonight in Jacksonville. Arsenio Hall is at the Comedy Zone tonight and tomorrow night. And he gave us a little preview. Take a listen. Arsenio Hall, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
You know what? This is a lot of fun, Ms. Ross. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me reach your audience.
We are so excited to have you on the show. So many fans, lots of excitement that you'll be doing two nights at the Comedy Zone this weekend. People really, I think, are going to enjoy the chance to come out and see you do some stand-up. What are you going to be talking about?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think people will find it enjoyable because you know how controlled television and radio can be. You know, we have bosses and we have teleprompters and things we're supposed to read and opinions we're supposed to assume. And when I get to do stand-up, I kind of just get to be me. I'm my own producer, director. I'm my own standards and practices. And it's fun to get out there and let people see what you really think. Not to mention, I'm one of the very few comics in the country that, during an election, knows the candidates. So I get to talk about, you know, Trump,
yeah,
Hillary, and the gang from personal experiences and everything from The Apprentice to interviewing her husband and talking her into coming out on the third segment back in the day of saxophone solos with the Posse.
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. And let me ask you, you were the Celebrity Apprentice winner, weren't you? And so what are your thoughts about Donald Trump?
Miss Ross, would you say it one more time? He was the Celebrity Apprentice winner. You know what's funny? I was the first black person to win Celebrity Apprentice, which also makes me the Jackie Robinson of Celebrity Apprentice.
You broke barriers. Yes.
Okay, now there's an upside and a downside to everything in life. There's a yin and a yang. When I first won, I was so excited. You know, I would touch people at Starbucks and say, you know, I won Celebrity Apprentice. Now, a few years later, I don't bring it up that much.
Oh, not as exciting an accomplishment. Well, what did you think when Trump won the election? I mean, what do you think of the guy?
You know, Donald Trump is a winner. He's going to win. He's going to say whatever he has to say and do what he has to do to win. You and I, off air, before we started this conversation, we're talking, because of your last name, we're talking about Betsy Ross and women in history with the last name Ross. It's like, who running for president? You know, when you talk about women in politics and around presidents, who would have a debate and bring all Bill Clinton's former affairs and seat them there? You know, when our kids read about history, they're not going to read about Betsy Ross and things. They're going to be reading about the time Paula Jones was sat in the front of a debate between Hillary and Donald Trump. They're going to read about, you know, when you read about quotes from Kennedy, ask not. You know, when you read about quotes from Reagan, you read things like, tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev. There's going to be a bust in bronze of Trump one day, and it's going to say, grab them by the hey.
And you're not.
Ross, it's crazy.
And
it's
you're.
Out of control, but it,
what do you think about that? Or did you vote for him? Can you share that? Like, you worked.
Oh,
you,
I never talk about who I. You know what? I never talk about who I vote for because it keeps my comedy pure. The bottom line is, when I work, I tag everybody because I'm an entertainer at that point. Now, what I talk about with my son and my woman at home, I leave that there because I don't think people want my politics in their comedy plate.
Yeah.
While they're consuming at the club. You know, I hit everybody. And I think that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, I mean, that's just the way it's supposed to be. I do know this. When I woke up and realized that Trump had won, I weigh it or evaluate it as a comedian. I'm like, yeah, that's going to be the best jokes.
No shortage of material now. Well, and
you know, I think when I woke up, I said, oh, my God, you know, Hillary's a nice lady, but the Trump material will write itself. You know,
and you're going to be doing this on stage Friday night, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm going to talk about everything and everybody I know. And you know what? What's interesting is one serious comment. We are such a great country. No one person can destroy us. So, you know, drain the swamp, refill it with whoever you want to fill it with, and let's see what happens. You know, I'm one of those people that believes if you win, that's what my fellow Americans have decided on. So that's where I'm going to start writing my jokes.
Now, let me ask you, Arsenio, because when you were on Celebrity Apprentice, of course, people had followed and watched you for years, and you still have just a huge fan base all over the country from all the appearances you've done in movies, on your own talk show. People still miss your talk show, and you've done it more than once, but do you miss doing that controlled environment of a talk show, or do you like getting out and performing more in front of a live audience?
I love performing in front of a live audience. I love acting. You know what I love, Ms. Ross, more than anything? When I left Cleveland as a young man, everybody's different. I'm kind of one of those kind of people that can't wake up and do the same thing every day. I came here and got in show business because there were so many things I could do, just like the list you ran through. I love to act. I love to do voiceovers for cartoons. I love to do different things constantly. And the talk game, gosh, I did it a lot. I was sitting with Jay Leno Sunday night because we worked this place called Comedy and Magic in Hermosa on Sunday nights just to tune up for the week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about it. It's like, nobody's done as much as we have to the point where you get satisfied. I mean, remember, I was Alan Thicke's co-host when he came to America. I had one talk show that really sprung my career that actually was the result of Fox having a fight with Joan Rivers, and I got that Fox talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did Coming to America and Harlem Nights and decided I missed talk, and I went to Paramount and started the Arsenio Hall show. I've done a lot of talk in my day. And talk has changed a lot. There was a time when you could sit and have a really great conversation with whoever. You know, I love to talk to everybody from Dan Rather to Kanye, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I've done it all. But the bottom line is now there's so many talk shows, your producers will say, hey, can we get Dan Rather to Turkey Bowl? And I'm like, you know, because everybody's trying to do something different. And part of it's my fault because I had the president playing saxophone. So what's going to be down the road? Probably Obama slow jamming the news. But the deal is, the only way I would really be happy with another talk show is if I could talk.
And you don't think you... Well, you did a lot of talking, but you know what? You were a really good interviewer, too. And I think that you took a really traditional format and you tweaked it and you made it relatable to a younger audience that, you know, they might not have watched Johnny Carson, but they watched you. And
yeah.
I don't really see, I think you were so influential in terms of opening up that format to younger viewers. And we see that today with all the guys and there's one or two women trying to do it today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. I think at some point, we got to let more ladies kind of have an opportunity so we can hear that voice. As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm doing on the road, it's a small thing, but I found out that sometimes when you go to a place, a club around the country, somehow they'll always hire a man to open for you. And I realized after having one female opening act in Portland at the, I think it was a Comedy Zone up there, I started saying to my assistant, check the area and request a female comic. Because if you don't request it, it's...
Arsenio Hall talking about his stand-up act. He is at the Comedy Zone tonight and tomorrow night. Get your tickets at comedyzone.com. And acclaimed local actor and producer Jason Woods has made a name for himself with his one-man show telling the classic story, A Christmas Carol. Woods is gearing up for a series of performances this month across the area. Here's more about that. Jason Woods, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Always an honor.
Good to have you. The fifth year in a row now, you'll be performing A Christmas Carol, taking on more than two dozen roles in this one-man show. This has become a beloved holiday tradition that you've created all by yourself here on the First Coast. So congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
Pretty exciting.
It is exciting. It's a great year for it. Expanding audiences and enthusiasm, and I'm just floored by it and excited.
How did you come up with the idea to perform this classic, of course, but not just doing the part of Scrooge, but all the parts, a one-man show?
The one-man part, my heroes are of the British stage and British film, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Judi Dench, Emma Thompson, a lot of beloved actors and actresses. And Patrick Stewart had done a reading on Broadway in the early 90s, and I think he continued until 2007. And I wanted to expand it into more of the acting part and developing characters, and of course, utilizing original music to help tell it and hopefully what is a cinematic way.
And so that's the goal on stage. You're really taking people through a narrative arc as if they're watching a movie.
That's my aim. And then people, it's wonderful to hear people talk about it. Everyone sees the same thing, but of course they all see it happen differently. Yet it's just me on stage. So it's always a thrill.
You have so much demand for this show that you have a whole series of performances coming up all over the area. You used to just do one show a year.
Yeah.
It's sort of mushroomed, hasn't it?
It has. Sometimes things like that happen. I'm delighted.
When families come to see you and when they bring their children, that must be gratifying. Do the kids come up to you afterwards and talk to you about all the characters?
Well, the first thing the parents say is, my child sat still through the whole thing.
amazed.
It's a delight because it is adapted very strictly from the book. There's such richness in that language. They share that enthusiasm, and I love to hear them say it's as if they haven't heard the story before.
Jason Woods, it is a pleasure, and break a leg at all of these performances that you'll be doing by yourself. A Christmas Carol, the Dickens classic, adapted and performed by Jason Woods. Go see him at a number of performances all over the area. Visit jasonwoodschristmascarol.com to get your tickets. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Here's another idea for your weekend. Black Violin, the classically trained South Florida twosome, performs tomorrow night at Jacksonville's Ritz Theater. Virtuosos Wilner Will B. Baptiste and Kev Marcus Sylvester have a national following, mashing up classical violin with hip-hop and pop. It's a one-of-a-kind, genre-busting act. Take a listen to their act.
Okay, well, Black Violin, we grew up playing classical music, studying classical music, but we also grew up loving hip-hop and living the hip-hop culture, whether it's we're in a corner freestyling or making beats, you know, where it's our fitted caps and our sagging pants when we were growing up, so we live that culture, but at the same time, we study classical music at a very high level all throughout middle school, high school, and we both got college scholarships doing it, so... So basically what we did is that we combined classical music, you know, in its purest form with hip-hop and popular music.
That's Black Violin, Saturday at the Ritz. Tickets at ritzjacksonville.com. And finally, this hour, Greece is one of the few countries in the world where folk music and dance are as alive today as they were in ancient times. You can enjoy that vibe in St. Augustine starting today at the 19th Annual Greek Festival and Arts and Crafts Fair. The stories of the islands, the mountains, and the villages of Greece with music, dance, and, of course, delicious food. Festival spokeswoman Susan Stone is on the line to say, Opa, the Greek festival is on. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Opa. Can't wait. We start at 3 p.m. today and running until 9, and then we'll be open tomorrow from 10 to 9 again, and then Sunday 11 to 5. We've been waiting patiently. We were supposed to have had our event during Hurricane Matthew. That was our weekend. So
right. You had to postpone. Sure. Yeah, so now that it's a little later in the calendar, you'll still have all of the incredible music and dancing and Greek food. What's on the
Absolutely.
Menu?
Absolutely. Oh, our favorite, moussaka, which always sells out. So please come before Saturday because you just never know if there's going to be any left by Sunday. Pastitsio, which is like a Greek lasagna. It's delicious. Way better than lasagna in my book, but I'm biased, I guess. And, of course, we've got baklava and spanakopita, which is spinach and cheese pie, and then tiropoda, which is like its cousin. It just doesn't have the spinach. All kinds of favorites. And, of course, we have a taverna, which is our bar, so we'll have lots of Greek alcohol. So you can make it a one-stop shop for your evening if you want. We have live music, once again, from the Hellenic Band. Our dancers will be performing, and I think this weather actually is better because they won't be sweating to death.
Yeah, and with the Knights of Lights in St. Augustine, lots of people flooding into the city for the holidays, and the Greek festival will be at the St. John's Marketplace. That is off I-95 and State Route 207. Anything else people need to know as they come on out?
Right there. It's right there at the flea market. So if you see the sign for the flea market, that's where you're going to park. And we'll be sharing the parking lot. So that's our main thing this year because we've always been at Francis Field in the last few years. We're a little bit nervous about our location change, but I think it could be positive, too. So people will see us from 95.
Excellent. And this is the 19th annual Greek Festival in St. Augustine. So kudos to you for making sure it goes ahead this year in spite of Matthew earlier in the calendar. Susan Stone on the line from St. Augustine. Have fun this weekend.
Oh, we will. Thanks. Hope to see you.
And go to staugreekfest.com for more information. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Send your questions and comments about the show to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org and subscribe to our podcast up every day on iTunes and the WJCT app. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.